I just thought it'd be a quick 2 minutes. We have the full 45. I want to thank everybody for coming. Thank you, Dr. Berger, for each and every time agreeing to give us some of your Torah. It's always very, very enlightening and fun. Next week is July 4th. You can learn on your own, but we have no Pasha share. July 11th is Rabbi Hartstock.
Okay. So, we all know the story of the Meraglim or the Torim or whatever you want to call them. I would like to actually read sections of the key sections of the story and sort of go over it with you in an introductory fashion to see what some of the issues are that we will get to. So, if you look at the very beginning of Shlach, God speaks to Moshe. There's no preface to this. God speaks to Moshe. And he says... You should send people, one from each shevet, whatever kol nasi bohem means. We are told that Moshe chose certain people. And Kulam Anoshim Roshei Vnei Yisrael Hema. I can't read this that pasuk without thinking of an experience that I had once upon a time in Queens. My youngest son had been in Yeshiva Dov Revel, which was deteriorating by the time the sixth grade was coming to an end. And we had to switch him to the Yeshiva of Central Queens. I was sitting in the office where I would be told how much I have to pay. So I had to be very careful about what I would or would not say. I looked up at the wall, and there was a framed certificate honoring the donors to the Yeshiva. So of all the psukim, or all the Mamore Chazal, or all the lines from Bialik, that could have been chosen from the entirety of Jewish literature to honor their donors, they chose Kulam Anoshim Roshei Vnei Yisrael Hema. I couldn't say anything at that moment about their calling their donors the Meraglim, but a few months later I screwed up the courage to say something, and they did take it down there for a little while. But I can't read that pasuk without thinking about the donors to the Yeshiva of Central Queens. In any event, the charge to these people, whose names are then provided, is in Psukim Yud Zayin through Chaf Aleph, which I won't read, but you could take a look at them, and I'll summarize what I think are the key elements in it. They should assess, Moshe tells them that they should assess the strength of the nation that's there, whether the cities are fortified or unfortified. They should assess the fruitfulness of the land, and they should take a sample of the fruit. We are told the end that the period was Yimei Bikurei Anavim. At the time when the grape harvest was becoming ripened. I was once at a family simcha in Los Angeles with my distinguished brother-in-law David Shatz, and as we walked out of shul after Minchan Shabbos, where this was the laning, and the last words were Yomim Yimei Bikurei Anavim, and in a zany moment, I thought about how you could spell these words differently, and I asked him why it is that the Torah specifies that these were the days when people were criticizing humble people. We had a whole discussion about why this was the time when people were criticizing humble people, Bikurei Anavim. We had a serious sounding discussion, and then I looked behind me, and there were these two young men who were within earshot. I was thinking, what if they actually heard this serious discussion about why these were the days when you criticize humble people, and they would get home and they would say, you know, I've listened to these two professors, and they would, you know, there's something wrong with them. In any event, that's another machshava zara that I have about these psukim. Now, the meraglim, whom we call meraglim, are tarim. If anyone was at Rabbi Es Shalom's shiur on Shabbos, he made a point of the characterization of these people as tarim and not meraglim, as people who would sort of go through the land, tourists almost. But as was pointed out in the discussion, they are described as meraglim, or the word the ragel is used in Dvarim, as we shall see in a moment. They are tarim, that is, they look through the land to assess it, but they are also meraglim. That is, they are also asked to assess the strength of the nations and how they might best be conquered. And they come back with a report, which again I won't read with you now. I don't think we have time to actually read the text, but you know this text. They say that the land is Avat Chalav Udvash, very positive report, which they tell Moshe. And here is its fruit, because they took an Eshkol Anavim. And then, after they say these nice things, we get to Pasuk Chof Chet, where they say, Efes ki az ha'om ha'yoshei v'oretz ve'harim v'tzuros k'dolos me'od v'gami lidei ha'anok v'inu sham. The people there are extremely powerful. And Kalev immediately apparently senses that there's something wrong with this, even though what they said, as we'll see later in the Ramban, what they said was true. But Kalev realizes that the will of the people is being undermined, and he said, we can defeat them. And then, in response, we get a statement by the Meraglim in Pasuk Lamed Bet, which appears to contradict directly what they said earlier. Vayotziu di basa oris asher taru osol bnei Israel emor oris asher avardu v'lasur osa eretz ocheles yoshvei v'chol ha'am asherim v'sachar shem yidos. This is a land that consumes its inhabitants. So what happens to eretz zavas cholov udvash? And we'll see what the Ramban says about that later. So this is the basic story, and of course what follows is the people's complaining and their punishment. This story is retold at the beginning of Torah. Moshe tells this story near the very beginning of Sefer Dvarim. So if you turn there to the first chapter of Dvarim and go to Pasuk Chaf Bet. Here is the way the story reads there. So let's look at it together. This one I think I do want to read, at least part of it. Vatikrivun elai kulchem. Moshe is talking to the people. Vatomru nishlecha anoshim lefaneinu. V'yachperu lanu es haaretz. Let's send people before us and they will scout. They will. Yachperu really means that they should act as spies. They'll figure out what's going on in the land. Vatomru. I'm sorry. V'yoshivu osanu davar es haderech asher na'alebo ve'es ha'arim asher navo aleihen. This is a question not for an assessment of the land. This is a request specifically to figure out the best way to conquer it. V'yitav b'nai ha'davar, and Moshe said he liked the idea. V'yakach mikem shnei masar anashim yishachad la'shavet. And they went to the land, and they indeed, by Ragluo saw, they acted as spies. Vayichuviyadami prioritz, etc. They took from the fruit of the land. They weren't asked to do that. At least the people didn't ask Moshe to ask them that. But they take it. And they told us, they came back, and they told us, Moshe speaking, that is, they told me and they told you, Tova Ores Asher Hashem Elokeinu Nosein Lanu. This is an excellent land. V'lo Avisem La'alos. there's something missing here, and at this point, it's going to appear later. You refuse to go. Why? I don't know. At this stage of Moshe's presentation, I don't know. And Vateraglubi Alechem, Vatomru, Visinas Hashem, Osono, Hosionim, Eretz Mitzrayim, Oseis Osono, Biata, Marilash Midena. We're going to be destroyed by them. And now we're told why they reacted that way. The spies, our brothers, caused our hearts to turn into liquid because they told us what the people there were like. And just one more verse to look at this stage. Something that comes out of nowhere. Lamed Zayin. Gam bi hisanaf Hashem biglalchem lemar gam atolo savosham. God got angry at me because of you. He got angry at me as well because of you. And told me I also won't go into the land. So, what we have here are significant differences and even apparent contradictions. Number one, and by Midbar. Well, what's the most evident problem in terms of inconsistencies between the two accounts?
Who initiated
it? Yes. In Bamidbar, God initiates it. And here, the people do, and there's no reference to God at all. God has nothing to do with this in Moshe's retelling of the story. Second, it's related to this, but it's not quite the same. In Bamidbar, God commands Moshe to do this, and in Devarim, Moshe agrees to the people's request without any reference to divine consultation. Three, in Bamidbar, in Shlach, we have a full exchange involving the Meraglim before, or at least we have a significant exchange, before the people are afraid to go. In Devarim, we are told, or Moshe tells the people, that they brought back a good report, and you decided not to go. And we have to wait until the people respond to him to learn that the Meraglim had presumably discouraged them. Four, in Bamidbar, after the description of the good character of the land, how it's an Eretz Zabat Chalav Udvash, the Rabbim make a 180, and they say Eretz Ocheles Yoshvehahi. In Devarim, there is no reference to anything negative that was said about the land itself. Nothing. Finally, that surprising verse 37, in Bamidbar, there are no negative consequences to Moshe out of this story. And in Devarim, he says at the end of his account that God got angry at him as well and told him that he couldn't go into the loop. So, let me first tell you about an interesting article that appeared a few years ago in a major biblical journal of biblical studies, the Journal of Biblical Literature, written by a religious professor at Bar-Ilan named Joshua Berman, let me say first of all that the issues that I raise now led, or among the reasons that led Bible critics to say straightforwardly that the author of Deuteronomy wasn't familiar with the version of the story that's in Numbers, and what you have here are different traditions about what happened. With this in mind, it's worth keeping, the article that he wrote, has that background. He pointed to Hittite treaties of kings and their vassals in the 14th century or so BCE. And these treaties have historical prologues. And he shows that the same kings and the same scribes shift the story of what happened and the relationship between this king and his vassals from one for a formula or formulation of this treaty to another one years later, when the relationship between the peoples had changed somewhat. And so he argues that here it's clear that the earlier version and the later version were known to the authors. This is not a case of a later author who doesn't know the earlier version of the story. Rather, he argues that in that culture, the history did not have to be accurate. It was the signaling of a changed status between the king and the vassal that mattered. Now, in the context of dealing with biblical criticism, source criticism, this is a very useful thing to keep in mind. I'm not prepared to say, with respect to the Torah, that accuracy is undermined, but I think that this article is extremely useful in reflecting why the people would not have been disturbed by the difference in presentation from what happened, that is, the choice of emphasis. Moshe's goal, as the Ramban says, without knowing about Hittite treaties, Moshe's goal is tochacha in Torah. It's to chastise the people, to highlight their sins. And this directly explains at least some of the differences that we looked at. The people initiate a plan that turned out to be catastrophic. They react badly even after receiving a good report, without reference right away to the fact that there was discouragement in that report. There is no reference in Dvarim to the assertion that the land is ochelet yosheveha, but they won't go anyway. And it is their responsibility for Moshe's not being allowed to go into the land. And there, I presume he meant that the events of Mei Meriva would not have, well, first of all, the events of Mei Meriva would not have happened if not for the extended 40-year period of sojourn in the desert, and that the attitude of the people the events that led to Mei Meriva, the complaint that led to Mei Meriva, is the same as the attitude reflected in their reaction to the Meraglim. The term used here in Dvarim, I didn't read that pasuk with you, but Moshe tells them, "Badavar hazein chem ma'aminim b'Hashem Elokeichem." There was a lack of faith. Now, in the case of the complaint that preceded Mei Meriva, you have the same deficiency. To the point where some Meforshim, I don't think this is the pshat, but some very important Meforshim who deserve our respect, say that when God tells Moshe and Aaron, Yan lo he'emantem bi lahakdisheni le'enei b'nei Yisrael, he'emantem is a hif'il, that is, it's a causative, and it means not that you didn't believe, which is what he'emantem normally means, but that you didn't bring about belief in the Jewish people, which you would have done had you obeyed the commandment to speak to the rock. So I think that that's the connection there. But the point is that the thrust of this story is to emphasize the sinfulness of the people. And as a result, Moshe chooses what he will tell carefully. I assume that God did speak to him, but we'll see in a while how those two accounts can be brought together. So let's look more carefully now at some of the issues. Did the Meraglim have suspect or at least ambivalent intentions from the outset? Were they really going into this with a completely open mind or with a positive attitude and were then discouraged when they saw the power of the nations there? Or were they at least ambivalent from the beginning? Now, there appears to be a contradiction in Rashi regarding this, and this means there are different statements by Chazal, because Rashi is citing Chazal. The pasuk that I think about in connection with the Yeshiva of Central Queens, Kulam Anoshim Moshe Bnei Yisrael Hema, Rashi says, quoting Chazal, something that defends the Yeshiva of Central Queens, that at that time they were tzaddikim. If you look at the Rashi on page Kuf Dalet on the handout, the first page of the handout, on Pasuk Bet, which I marked the passages that we might look at, on the next page, on Pasuk Gimel, it's not the next page because the next page is all Ramban. Following page, Rashi on Perek Gimel, page Kuf Vav, Va'osash, the second line at the end, Va'osash Kishayim Hayu, that they were presumably righteous people at that moment. So presumably they did not go into this with a negative expectation. But if you look at Rashi on Pasuk Chof Vav,
Kuf Yud,
thank you. Vayelchu Vayavo, I marked that short passage. Mahu Vayelchu, okay. It says Vayelchu Vayavo El Moshe V'El Aram. It should have said Vayavo El Moshe V'El Aram. They returned from their mission, and they came to Moshe and Aram. So what does it mean that they walked over and came to him? So Rashi says, "Mahu vayelchu lahakish halichasan leviyasan," to equate their going with their coming. Ma biyasan beitzara, af halichasan beitzara. That they were, they didn't have good intentions from the beginning. Now this is not the straightforward shot, I would say. But you have this theme that we'll see in a moment as well, emerging in Chazal. If you look at Chizkuni back on Kuf Dalet, on the bottom right, just one line long, I'm taking you back too far. Chizkuni on Pasuk Gimel on page Kuf Vav. But mikan va'elech, presumably almost immediately, hechmitzu, they became their kashrut was undermined. Kamosha peresh Rashi gabei ve'elchu ve'yavo. So Chizkuni is sensitive to the fact that Rashi appears to be contradicting himself. And his answer to this is that somehow, the minute they actually had this job to do, and they started thinking about the war that would have to be fought, they immediately lost their courage and planned to bring back a bad report. It's difficult to say that this is pshat. You could have here just two different views in Chazal, but this sense that. The bad report was somehow somewhat predictable. Also emerges from a very famous Rashi on Pasuk Tet Zayin on page Kuf Vav. Vayikra Moshe LaHoshea Binun Yehoshua. If you look at that Rashi there, which is marked. Why did Moshe change the name to Yehoshua? Nispalel olav ko Yoshiacha meyatzas miraglim. He actually changed his name in order to pray that God should save him from what the Meraglim were going to do. But this is before they leave. So either you can say that Moshe somehow knew this benevuah, or you could say that he was suspicious of what might happen without a prophetic revelation from the very beginning. So there is this sense, at least in Chazal, that there was something wrong with these people from the beginning. I should note that the change of name that Rashi implies, at least, happened now in the context of the Meraglim, is not so straightforward, because Yehoshua appears in last week's parsha, right? When Eldar and Medad mitnavim b'machaneh, and Yehoshua comes and tells Moshe that this is happening, and he tells him that he should lock them up. And Moshe says, no, whatever. Sounds like his name was Yehoshua back then. He's referred to as Yehoshua. So you could say that the Torah is referring to him now by the name he was going to be given later, because the readers of the Torah will know him as Yehoshua, which is entirely possible. That may well be what Chazal think. But if you look at Rashbam on Pasuk Tetzai, and again on page Kuf Vav, where you already are, he says, V'lo shekra'o ato Yehoshua. It's not that he called him Yehoshua now. And the truth is, he's already called Yehoshua back in Shmos, not only in last week's parsha. Elokach peirusho, Hoshea binun shamarnu namalo shenikro kein b'veis aviv, hu oso shekara Moshe Yehoshua shenaso meshoso v'ifkido aviso, shekach hayomin hagam, that when a person entered a new position as a close servant of a king, or the person who's in charge, Moshe is called the king, according to some interpretations, in the verse Vayehi Bishul Melech that many Mefarshim refer to Moshe. There was a practice that when a king took a new servant to be close to him, he changed his name. Shekach hayom min hagam kimo. Vayikra paro shem Yosef tzofnas paneach, and vayikra l'Daniel Belshazzar. So that we know of cases where people's names were in fact changed when they reached the position of immediate service, high level service to a king. And not only is Daniel called Belshazzar, but the continuation is the who the Shmei Belshazzar Kishem Elohe, that this was like the name of his God, which is true here, right? Yehoshua is the name of God, so that Yehoshua may have been called Yehoshua the moment he started to serve Moshe, but he could be referred to that earlier as well. In any case, yes.
Doesn't that contradict what the Midrash says in the Gemara, which actually brings it? The time you call Abraham, Abraham is a head. If you call Abraham head, Abraham, we're supposed to call him Abraham, is a head in Atzmo.
Right.
Therefore, the concept now that Yeshua was called before, why can't we have the same measurement? It's a head.
Well, so because in the case of Abraham, and you're going to ask me about Yaakov, so I want to make clear in the beginning that there's a problem here. But in the case of Avraham, it says you should not be called any longer Avram, rather you should be called Avraham. And in this case it doesn't say that. The problem is that in the case of Yaakov it also says that, and he continues to be called Yaakov, but that's a separate question. But in the case of Avraham, I think that would be the answer, that there's an explicit reference that he shouldn't be called Avraham. He shouldn't be called Avraham from now on. Who are these people whose motives we're trying to figure out? Are they the Nisi'im of the Shvatim? It's problematic to say that. Why?
You have other names.
Where?
Naso.
Yeah, in Parashas Naso. It's hard to forget all of those names in Naso when you have six identical psukim repeated again and again. that are different only because there's a different Nasi name. And these are not the names of these people. These are different people. And so you have the Rashbam point out, if you look at it at Pasuk Yud Gimel again on page 104, Ikar Pshuto Kach, he says, Kol Eile Shnei Masar Anoshim Tikach Me Osam Shabi Yisrael Shenoso Osam Libam Laleches. You should take people who kind of volunteer to go. Shetechavenes Ha'am Otachriz La'am Miho Ishe Yitzel Aleches L'Rageles Horetz. You should ask for volunteers, and among those whom they choose, you pick 12. And he goes on to point out something that is hard to figure out exactly how he interprets the verse, but he uses a technique that exists, which indicates that Rashbam davened in Rina, because Rina is the only shul I've ever been at where the Baal Koreh or Baal Kriya can be corrected sometimes. When he misplaces the mercho tipcho, if we'll say a tipcho before a mercho, and it should be the other way around, or he says that in this shul and only in this shul, sometimes he will be corrected because of a sense that the meaning has changed. So sometimes I think it's even the right thing to do, but I've never been in a shul where this was done, except here. Look at the last three lines of the Rashbam. Kol nosibahem, hatam shetachas kol mochiach peusho. It's kol tipcho nosibahem. It's not kol nosibahem. So it doesn't mean that it was every prince among them who came, but rather, I think that this means that with respect to all of them, a person was elevated among them. It's not smooth, but I don't know that any interpretation of this is smooth. So in any event, we are not dealing, I think it's fair to say, that we are not dealing with the Nisi'im. And if you look down in Triskuni there, in that one line, at the bottom that I referred to earlier mistakenly, but now we got there, he actually comes to a similar conclusion, but with an opposite attitude toward the trup. He completely ignores the trup here. And he says, Tishlechu kol nasi bohem, means, kol nasi yishlach ish echad mishivto. So kol nasi is the subject of the plural verb tishlechu, but you get roughly the same conclusion. Sfarno, which I don't know that we have time to read, but he says that God told Moshe to choose them so that they would at least have some integrity. Moshe would choose people with some integrity. And that is why they reported truthfully about the quality of the land. They didn't lie about that until they were kind of pressured to, and then they did. But we'll see what the Ramban says about this in a moment. Okay. So now let's look at the Ramban's discussion of the how he sees this whole passage and how he sees this sin. Before we read it, because we're not going to have time to read everything, let me summarize at least some of the key points. The objective of this mission was primarily to determine tactics for conquest. This was the request made by the people in Dvarim, right? They didn't say a thing about the quality of the land. Moshe added the questions about the quality of the land because he knew that the answer would be positive and he wanted to arouse the enthusiasm of the people. And also because God, when he spoke to Moshe, used the word viyaturu or viyasuru, which was different from the purely tactical intent of the people's request in Dvarim. Moshe, the Ramban says, did not consult God, as we see from the Dvarim account. God took the initiative of intervening on his own to make sure that there would be a representative of each tribe rather than the smaller contingent that would have been sent just on a normal spying mission, as we know from the fact that Yahushua sent how many spies?
Two.
And they were chosen so that they might bring back a good report, and if not, that the decree would justly affect the entire people, since there was a representative from each tribe. I don't know how this accounts for the fact that the tribes of Kalev and of Yehoshua also were subjected to the same Gezerah, so that I don't know if this worked so well, but I don't have an answer for that. So now let's take a look at the Ramban, as they say in Hebrew influenced by Yiddish, inside. In English, rather, influenced by Yiddish. Let's look at the Ramban inside. Page Kuftal. I won't read everything that's noted here because we won't have time to do that, but I want to pick out the key points. He begins by quoting Rashi. Shlach lecha anoshim l'da'atcha ani eini mitzaveh lecha. That's what Rashi said. God said, I'm not commanding you. If you want to send, go ahead and do it. Why? And Rashi then goes on to quote the story in Devarim, that the people asked for it, and but Rashi says at the end of the third line of the Ramban, Umoshanim lach bashchina, he then did consult God. And Amar, Moshe has told God, Ani amarti l'Rashi tova, shenemar alei eschem yoni mitzrayim al eretz tova. I told him it's a good land. But now they are apparently not so sure. So we have this really disconcerting assertion in Rashi, which is a Medrash, that Moshe was so annoyed that he actually wanted this to be an opportunity that this generation wouldn't inherit the land. B'yesh kam nishol, says the Ramban. Im kein, Moshe atzmocha taba inyan. Then Moshe himself sinned. Why? It says that he thought this was a good request. So how could he be upset by it? When he gave instructions here in Bamidbar, he told them, take a look and see if it's good or not good. So he's doing the same thing that he's upset about, according to Rashi. The Od, what did they do wrong? Ki Moshe amar lahem uisemes haaretz mahi v'esama yoshev alehav chazok u'harofeh hama'at hu'imra. That's what he asked them to tell him. V'amar lahem be'arim ha'b'machanim imitzarim. Are they fortified or not? V'al kol panim v'yu tzvichim la'hashivo al ma'ashe tzivo osam. They had to answer him. They had to say what he to full the mission. U'ma pishom u'machat osam. Well, what is their sin? That was true. And the Ramban says, then don't tell me what you might want to tell me. They said it's Eretz Ochel, that's their sin. He said, that's not their only sin. I'm sorry. Kalev started getting upset with the people before the Meraglim had said Eretz Ochel es Yoshvel. That the people were discouraged because of the report about the strength of the nation. Then he continues to argue that not clear what they did wrong. However, if you go to page Kuf Yud, here is what the Ramban asserts is what really went on. The Gam Zavas Cholavud Vash He Vavur Shet Sivo Sal Niros Hashmenohi Imrozo Heishivu Lo Ki Yishmeinah Vagam Zavas Cholavud Vash He. That's all very nice. And as he said earlier, if you go to line 5, that's right. That was true. Because he asked them to do that. But, in the middle of the next line, Avol Rishon b'milas Ephes. Ephes ki azon. Shehim ora al davar ofes v'nimnamin ha'adam she'i efshar b'shuminyon. Once they didn't say azon ayoshev b'kirbo. That would have been correct and that would have been an appropriate thing to say. They said, but with a very, very big B. And it's stronger than a but with a big B. Ephes is a very, very strong word. And it means that despite the fact that it's a good place, this is a contrast to what comes before. Despite the fact that it's a good land, what can we do? The people are too powerful, and we will not be able to overcome them, as they said later explicitly. And so what we're dealing here is an explicit discouragement of going to the land, which I think is the pshat of this passage. One might even argue that the report about the quality of the land was designed, as Rashi suggests elsewhere, I mean in this passage, but Rashi we haven't read, that it was designed to give credibility to the Efes Ki Az Ha'am. He said, unless you say something true at the beginning, you're less likely to be believed at the end. And in this context, I just want to note one thing that the Ramban says about an obvious problem, and that is that they contradict themselves. We've already noted this by saying it's an Eretz Avas Chalopet Vash, and it's a good land, and then saying it's an Eretz Yocheles Yoshveh. How can that, those things be true together? So he makes a suggestion. It's an interesting suggestion, at least, that Eretz Yocheles Yoshveh means that it's very difficult for normal people to survive there. So who survives? Giants survive. So Az Ha'am, why? Because the people who are not so strong were killed off by this Eretz Ocheles Yoshev. Okay.
Shkaya, thank you very much. Like 2 weeks, Rabbi Hartzler.